Now we come to the last of our sayings for this morning, which is one of his pithy sayings that seems particularly relevant and helpful and resonant with the last movements of recollection, which are where all of these movements that we've been talking about become more constant and more stable and complete. Remember God constantly and call out to him with sighs. Remember God constantly and call out to him with sighs. And remember that when we're using this remembering, this is the recollection or remembering in the heart. It's not just the recall of facts in the usual way we talk about memory. It's a remembrance of the presence, the divine presence within the heart at the depths of the human soul. And in that sense, we can remember constantly, because that is happening all the time. And just by way of explanation also, the idea of calling out to him with sighs was a symbolic way of speaking about prayer, which was inarticulate. A sigh is not saying it in words, and that was a quite commonly used expression in the monasticism that Francisco was part of. So remember God constantly, and call out to him with sighs. Now the eighth movement that Suna talks about has become something of a favorite amongst many people who've explored Suna's works, because it introduces the spirituality of the hedgehog. And he has this eighth movement is a realizing. Is noticing when there is a realizing of the true spiritual identity of the self. So this is a follows quite naturally onto the one that we've just talked about before, where there was a kind of emptying of the self. And in this emptying of the self, letting go of the self, and being able to do that in our relationships and in prayer, there is paradoxically a true finding of the self. You lose yourself in order to find yourself, as Jesus said. And the self is not destroyed, but it is transformed. And Asuna gives two particular ways of talking, or two symbols of talking about this different way of being, where the self is transformed. And the one is, and we have, you'll see there's a crown. He says that the self is just re-experienced as both Catholic and royal. It is the true dignity of the human being. This emptied self, paradoxically, is the way of discovering the true royal identity of the human being. And that is something that is universal. Having all the glory of the king's daughter, he says, and that's a reference to the Psalms. So we come into this true inheritance of humanity in this way. And almost juxtaposed with that is this other image of the humble hedgehog that is resting secure behind a stone. So it's not only the sense of the full dignity of the human being and the grandeur and the greatness of humanity, but it's also discovering the something of the repose of the hedge, of a little hedgehog that goes behind the stone and is able to rest peacefully. And it's something, what he obviously, I'm surprised that there were hedgehogs in Spain, but maybe I'm just ignorant about that. But anyway, regardless of that, this, what I think he was trying to draw out from the symbol is that there grows in the recollected person a kind of security of their own identity in God. So that whether they are suffering persecution, as he says, or whether they are abandoned, they there is deeper within them, a deeper identity where they can remain with all the repose of a hibernating hedgehog, with its prickles and defenses laid back and drawn in. And it's that sure sense of self that comes from abandoning the project of the separate self from God. And that's the paradox of this kind of peacefulness, this deeply inward heart peacefulness that is possible in this life. And it is a kind of peacefulness that is completely independent of what is happening externally. And you may have been in the presence of someone who has something of that almost infectious, contagious inner peace that is a real gift, particularly in our times of chaos or persecution or strife of any sort. And if we return for a moment to our saying and see whether this saying opens this understanding of peaceful recollection a little bit further for us, we can perhaps be helped by the fact that Osuna reflects on this saying, remember God constantly, by pointing out this notion that was part of his his theology of memory, that it's not really that we are, remember God within us, it's that we are remembered. So our deepest, at a deeper existential level, it is that our existence is continually being remembered within us. And it is more a coming to a recognition of what already is, rather than anything else. And it's this sort of certain intuitive knowledge that the needs of the self to be remembered are constantly being met, that quite naturally gives a kind of repose and dignity to the human soul. And in all of these movements, something has been happening as we have been flagging up as we go along to the what was called the powers or the human powers, the powers of the person. And in particular, Osuna looks at the powers of the intellect and the power of the will, and also the power to remember. And all of these are being transformed and changed and able to operate in a spiritual way as well as their normal operation. So what makes, when we say that we love God with all our might, the might is referring to these human powers to know, the power to make choices, and the power to remember. And those were three of the powers that were particularly important to understand who we are as human beings. So what is happening here in this last movement of recollection that Asun is talking about is that these, we see how the power to know and the power to choose and remember all begin working together in a completely new way. They are all integrated in prayer and in relationships, and they are able to work without all of the distortions and of the needs of the self, the ordinary self, without all the kind of hidden agendas and the limitations as well. So there is the strengthening of the will and the intellect and the memory rather than the quenching of those powers of the soul, because now they are able to function in not only the ordinary ways, but also there is a purer desiring, pure desires is the way he puts it, and the spiritual knowing and recollection, which is the spiritual remembrance. If we go back to the phrase, remember God constantly and call out to him with sighs, it may be helpful to just key in to the actual practice of prayer that Asuna talks about. Remembrance of God was not just an idea, it was something that was practiced. And he gives a kind of window onto their everyday kind of prayer life where they were practicing the remembrance of God. And it helps to illuminate what he's talking about here. So I'll just describe it to you. What they would practically have done is taken a phrase, like a short phrase from the scriptures or something like that, and it would be something like the God of love within this, within my soul, God of love within my soul. And gradually moving from repeating it and saying it out loud in prayer to gradually repeating it just in an interior way. So the repetition of a prayer, of a phrase from scripture, was part of the practice. And as he explained it, as you went about the business of the day, as you became troubled by thought or distracted from what you were doing, you could return to your phrase, and that occupied your mind in a helpful way. That if you found yourself getting anxious, for instance, about an undue fear, that's just your particular kind of cycle of anxiety, you could use the repetition of your phrase as a way of occupying your mind with the things of God, and find that kind of inner stability again. So that would only be the first part of the practice. And the memory there is being using it in, it's just what you hold in your mind. It's just remembering the God within. And that we could say is our normal operation of the faculty of the memory. But as it begins to take root in the heart and in the soul, he says you can then begin to repeat the phrase where you're no longer remembering the meaning of it. You're no longer thinking of the meaning of it. It's simply a way of returning your awareness to the heart. And to borrow a phrase from the centering prayer movement, it becomes more a symbol of your consent to the presence and action of God within. So there, that's the next stage of being able to use a phrase without attention to what the meaning of the phrase is, and it becomes more interior. And then he says that in the way that what we remember feeds our desire for what we remember. Memory serves desire. That's the kind of principle that he is working with. We will want what we hold in our minds. At a very superficial level, everybody, all the advertisers know that. You know, if you feed your mind with images of certain things, you will want them. And this same principle is applied in the practice of contemplation, that remembrance of God feeds our desire for God. So this is the last part. Remember God constantly, and calling out to Him with sighs is, to call out with sighs was the practice of desiring. Just not any specific thing, not asking God, please will you do this, or please will you do that. It's just a simple, inarticulate desire to be present to and join to the presence of God within us. And that, in some way, we see something of how these powers of the soul are beginning to operate in a different kind of way. And he gives a very ordinary, everyday symbol of that, which is the boiling water. If we imagine that the water is our mind, our knowing, our willing, our desiring, our remembering, and when it's warmed up from the heart, from the fire of the heart, like a pan on the stove, it begins to steam, and there's a sort of a transformation, and it still is something, but it's in a completely different form. And he employs these quite ordinary, everyday images to talk about these spiritual things, but they're quite helpful to hang on to, because we tend to remember the pot, the boiling pot, and the hedgehog, and many other examples as well. And then the last movement really is the movement of complete union between the soul and God in the soul. There's a kind of mutuality about the way he speaks about it. And this last movement is the beginning of this union, and also a completion and deeper constancy of all the others put together. So in some sense, it's a completing of the recollection, the gathering of the whole person within the heart. But it is also a constant beginning. So it's not a kind of closing of growth. It's the foundation of the whole of the contemplative life, that is always something new. There's always more. It's always dynamic and growing. And he also is saying that as this recollection becomes more and more constant within us, it becomes not something that is only confined to the experience of prayer, but it's something that we can carry around with us in everyday life. It's not just a spiritual experience, it's a way of being, a manner of being in the whole of life. Says here, in the completing of all of these movements together and they're working together, what we will notice in it, what is actually observable to other people, is that it seems as if the whole personality becomes lit up and penetrated. There's a sort of glow that's discernible to other people, he says. And this is the perfection of recollection, the completion of recollection, that is as much as is possible in this life. And it is always, as I said, it is not perfection in the sense of closing it off, that's as far as you go. It's almost like the beginning as well, a constant beginning. And you'll see in the image there that there is in the heart of it all the movements that we have been talking about, concentrated, stabilized, and affirmed in the heart. God with the soul and the soul with God is the way that he talks about it. And it's when God is with the soul and the soul with God that we can fully participate in what God is doing. And it's that sense of just being involved in what already is that is the kind of paradigm shift. It's no longer finding out what is God's will as in a kind of external way. It's just participating and allowing and being open and receptive to what already is within. And in this way, Osuna says, the human spirit shares dominion with God. This is the full inheritance of what it is to be a human being, to share dominion with God. So although I realize that it is quite a sweeping kind of overview of his whole system of thought, I hope that there's something of the sense of the whole of it, and a sense of how maybe as we articulate these particular movements, interior movements, we're a little bit better able perhaps to notice them in ourselves and in the people that we may talk to about our spiritual journey, and begin then to be able to, having noticed them and recognized them, that we are able to then remember them. And they may require some decisions in order to affirm them and guard them and protect them. And we can look at what actually strengthens them. And these are movements that are there for us to notice and to pray for and to ask for, to long for, and then to respond to when we see them and to go with them rather than against them. I think think that's all I'm going to say about the movements. And let's have some time where, if you'd like to respond and see if there's any particular one that you'd like to revisit, or if there's some way that it resonates, a particular movement resonates with something in your own experience, or you have a different way of articulating something that we've spoken about this morning.
I see a connection to what is in this recent interview.
Was there any particular thing that you were connecting with?
Well, of course, the meditative practice to find this point where you realize that we're all the same somehow and can be compassionate.
So was that something of the first movement there?
Yes.
The kind of recognition of the spiritual companionship in that.
And bringing it into the communities. Let it give the feeling of connection with others.
Almost as it's necessary for us to have an experience of spiritual belonging in order to, and then out of that, if you notice, that was the where it starts, and then out of that there comes the growing solitude, and so it's the solitude is not a disconnection from other people.
No.
It grows out of our capacity to connect in a deep spiritual way, and very often I think that maybe that's one of the confusions that that somehow the otherworldliness is a disconnection from our capacity to relate. We're certainly in the desert tradition, the hermits had a profound sense of being in community, even more so than those necessarily living side by side. And lots of nods there. Yes, that's his experience too.
It is not a thinking process in the first instance. It develops from within, I think. I find that many times.
Yes, yeah. Is that perhaps resonates with the movement where he was talking about the flow of wisdom and the symbol there that he used was literally the pouring out of water. That's how it flows. This sort of deeply intuitive wisdom or insights from the heart. It's like a jug just coming out, pouring out the water. He uses the wisdom story from, which was one of the prophets, I think it's, where the widow, she doesn't have any oil in her jars, and she asks the prophet, is it Elijah? And he says, go into your room and collect jars from your neighbor. And she only has a tiny little bit of oil in her one jar. And it's the emptiness of the jars, the emptiness of the self, that as she begins to pour in faith, it just keeps flowing, it just keeps flowing. And she's a sort of wisdom figure that he uses to explain this extraordinary experience, that when you are deeply connected, there is a sense of flowing, of insight.
Ways actually that in the Mary and Martha story where the flowing comes from her sitting at Jesus' emptiness of her causes this action that is looked upon, is looked down upon in a way.
Mm-hmm.
He makes a big example of this overflow of love and emptiness, because it comes obviously not from wisdom of the mind, because she wouldn't have been able to do such a thing. There's this beautiful moment where she works from love and it comes from her heart, and there's this sort of pouring
Yes, it's a beautiful story, that, and maybe that's something of what Asuna is trying to help us to get a sense of, that this way of recollection is where life has a natural flow to it. There is a kind of spontaneity about it, and it's not a kind of knee-jerk existence at all. It is almost like it's how it's meant to be, essentially deeply natural.
And unselfconsciously.
Unselfconscious, yes.
There's no self-consciousness. It's not about what other people think. It's about what comes.
Yeah, it's sort of emptied self.